Blog Talk Radio.
Good day to you all. This is Priest Nagaya, Brother Nagaya, and we're here for another class. I hope you've all been well, and I hope you've all been maintaining as best you can in whatever circumstances you're in. Whatever circumstances that you find yourself in, maintain your faith. Whatever that takes, maintain your faith. Patience, humility, but take your time and think things through. Don't let anxiety, depression, anger, frustration, don't let those things overwhelm you. Don't let them overtake you. Always take an extra breath and think things through to endure. Remember, the Most High won't give you more than you can endure. And so you have to maintain that, remember that, and keep striving. Keep striving. Anyway, here we are for another week. Looks like we're going to finish 2 Samuel today. And seems the Most High is going to get us started into 1 Kings. We definitely should finish 2 Samuel today. And then we'll start getting into the first book of Kings. I do have a topic that we'll probably slide into maybe next week. I'm kind of working on it. And sometimes these topics take a while to develop. A lot of thought. It's not just reading the book, it's meditating on it and thinking about it and making sure that it's the right time to bring out the right information. So we'll see, but I am working on a couple other things. So we may start in Kings, the book of 1 Kings, and then kind of divert and come back to Kings. So please be flexible. And here we are. So let's go to the book of 2 Samuel. The book of 2 Samuel and chapter 20 is where we are, and that's where we're going to start today. And as we've been reading the stories of David, it kind of gives us an understanding of the life that they lived. Just keep in mind, the children of Israel were in their kingdom. So they were in their power at this time. And yet, even during this time, what we've read so far is we've read a lot of chaos, a lot of turmoil. Saul was king, and he was he was chasing David. And that period of time was, I believe it was about 14 years that he chased David. Don't quote me. I'll have to go back and look that up again. I should have looked that up before, and I apologize. Please forgive my failing. But it was years. I know for a fact that it was years, the time that we read about Saul and him pursuing David, and David was on the run, and he lived in other lands, and the people who were with him, his 400 men, but then their families as well. So you have to stop and think, yeah, let's recap that, because, and I apologize, I should have covered that before. Just to give you an example is that, you know, that time when David went and he was living down amongst the Philistines, that wasn't it wasn't a couple of weeks. We read these passages and we think, oh, well, you know, he was just there for a couple, maybe a month or two. No, this was a period of years. And so his parents, and we read about the 400 men that came to him, but they brought their families as well. And they went and they were exiled. And so, you know, whatever country you're living in, I know myself, I'm living in the United States of America. But that would be like if I had to go on the run and I was living in Canada or I was living in Mexico or Panama, but I had to go to another country, and I and my family and those, my followers and their families, were living in a whole other country. And then during that time when he was in this other land, you know, he had asked the king if his families could be, if they could have some land so that their families could survive. And so the king gave cities to them. And so their families were living in these other cities, exiled in another country amongst another peoples. And then Dave and his men were, they would see their families, but then they would go off because the king wanted them to go to war, and they were off doing other things. And so they weren't always at home. It was like they were soldiers on deployment, is the term we would think of it today, as if you have anyone in your family or a friend or someone you know who is or has been in the military, and they have to be deployed, So that's what was happening. And so they weren't always, don't get the impression that David and his men were in the land of Israel. They were not for all that time. And then, you know, and that just shows you all the turmoil, because here it is. This was, you know, with Moses, the Most High had told Moses to let the people know, let the children of Israel know, I'm going to give you your land. I'm going to bless you. I made a covenant with Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And so he made the covenant with Abraham. He reinforced it or repeated it to Isaac. And then again, it was passed down to Jacob. So he repeated it there. But the thing is, he told, through Moses, he told the children of Israel, this is the covenant I've made, and I'm giving this to you. I'm going to give you land. I'm going to give you, he gave them wealth. When they left Egypt, they were wealthy. They were wealthy in terms of they had all their families. They were wealthy in terms of they had gold and silver. They were wealthy in terms of they had flocks that they took with them. And then during that time that they were in the wilderness for 40 years, they collected even more. When they conquered these other nations they came across in wandering the wilderness for 40 years. There were a couple of occasions where the Most High said, conquer these people, but don't take anything from them. Basically, this nation that you're going to defeat, he told Moses, this nation you're going to defeat, these people are so foul and so filthy, destroy them. Do not take their flocks. Do not take even their gold. Don't take any of the fabric they have for clothing. Don't take their tents. Don't take anything that they own. And that's how filthy and disgusting these people are. And in one case, there was a man who took a wedge of silver. He took some silver and for himself. And the Most High had cursed the people. And the next battle that we went to, several of our people died. And the Most High said, I'm going to curse all of you, the whole nation, because one person disobeyed my orders. But that's how filthy those people were. But the vast majority of people during the 40 years of Moses, they had wealth because they gained more wealth and more flocks and more possessions. So by the time that Joshua took the children of Israel into the land to give them their portions of land, the children of Israel were very wealthy. They had all the things, all the possessions. They had their families and they had land. In today's time, I had seen a report a month or two ago where it talked about the average price of a home in the United States is $400,000. That's average. You can find less. You can find them for more. But the average price is $400,000. Most people can't afford that. And so it just shows you that the children of Israel were given, not only were they given a home, but they were given the land. They owned the land. And so it's, when you're looking at what we've read and when you read the scriptures and you see these examples and see the history of what these people went through, take it with an understanding that the children of Israel in their land, everything that we would hope for, you know, we grew up in this country and they talk about the American dream, quote unquote, and people talk about the American dream is to be able to have an income, have yourself a job or a business where you have enough income to support your family and you have a home so you can raise your family, you can live comfortably, you have a vehicle or a couple of vehicles so you can get around and the ability to take vacations and you have enough money to pay your bills and you can live comfortably in your home with your family, whether it's with a spouse, with children, but you have enough to sustain yourself and to be comfortable. That's what they talk about when they talk about the American dream. And most people in the country don't live that. And yet, when we look at this history, if you look at movies or you hear people talk about the ancient times of David and Saul, then they make the people sound like they were living. They had potato sacks for clothes, and they had raggedy sandals, and their homes were dusty and dirty, and they were just mud huts. And no, these people were living very luxuriously, very luxuriously. And, you know, even in this day and age, if you can buy a home, you don't own the land. Now, why do I say that? Because if you don't pay your property taxes, They'll come, they'll put a lien on your home, they'll kick you out and sell your home, even if you've paid for the home. You might live in a home that your grandparents paid for, and it's been paid for 50 years ago. But miss your property taxes and see if the county doesn't come and throw you out, take your home, and sell it at auction. So you don't even own, you, even though you've paid for the building, the actual house, you don't own the land that it sits on. You're actually renting it through taxes. And so when we look at what they had during the times that we're reading in 2 Samuel, when we went through Judges, when we went through 1 Samuel, is the fact that when Joshua distributed the land through the tribes and the peoples got their land, they owned that land. And when they put, whether they lived in a tent or whether they actually built a home, that the buildings, the structures they had on the land, they owned all of it. If your land had a pond, had a river running through it, whatever it had, all of that was yours. The trees that were on it, you cut that down and use the lumber. You could plant crops on it. But all the things that came with it, that was yours to own. So they were living very well. They had plenty of crops, flocks. They had servants. They had family. They had all the things that they could need. The Most High gave them a law in how to live their lives and how to deal with one another. And yet, what we just finished reading as one example is the turmoil that they went through. But why did they go through all of this turmoil? Why did they go through all the turmoil? Now, someone might say, what turmoil? If you've been listening to the classes we've been reading, we go back to Judges. Again, we read the book of Judges. We read 1 Samuel, 2 Samuel, Judges was constantly, we went through that, where they were constantly, it said, and the children of Israel did evil again in the sight of the Most High. And the Most High put them in captivity. And then they would cry out, please save us. And then we'd be brought back out of captivity. And then we would be good for, you know, he'd bring us out of captivity through one of the judges. And the judges would lead us, and we would be delivered, and we'd say, thank you, Father. And then what would happen? They'd be good for a while, and then we would read, and the children of Israel did evil in sight of the Lord again. So it was, what do they say, rinse, wash, repeat. And they go through this cycle. And you have to stop and think. And we're going to get to 2 Samuel today, but let's stop and really think about what we've read. And this is important in your journey in life, because if you don't know your history, you're doomed to repeat it. Now, we can apply that to Moses and Abraham and David and Saul and Samuel. We can apply it there, but you also have to apply it to your life. If I have a flaw, if I have, we call them vices today. If I have a vice that's not productive for me, it's destructive. If I have something that I've done in my past that was not a good thing and it hindered me, if I don't change, then I'm doomed to repeat that problem, you see. And so if I have a gambling problem, I'm not a gambler. I have gambled very little. Life itself is a gamble. But let me use that example. If I like to go to the horse track and bet on the horses, if I like to go to the casino and throw my money into the casino and the slot machines and the blackjack tables, but if I go do that, and if in the past, let's say that 15 years ago I went and I took a trip to Las Vegas and I spent some money and I said, oh, well, I know I can win. Let me go to the ATM and get more money. And I take money out of the ATM. But that money was my rent money. And let's say I spend it because I'm at the table because I'm hooked. I'm hooked at the gambling. And I don't win. And now I'm like, oh, my gosh, what am I going to do to get out of this? How can I get my rent? And so then I come home and I say to my friends, I say to my family, hey, let me borrow some money. Please help me so I can pay my rent. So then I borrow money and I get the rent paid. But then I turn around again and I start to gamble, I gamble some more, and it's a repeat. If I don't look at my history, if I don't stop and say, wait a minute, now this problem started because I went too far. I went overboard. I'm hooked on the gambling, and I went overboard, and I did something that was not conducive to a positive outcome. It's not helpful, conducive meaning helpful. It was not helpful to me having a positive outcome. So I have to stop and say to myself, you know what? When I get to gambling, I go overboard and I can't control myself appropriately. And then I ask my friends and family and they have to bail me out. Well, they're sick of bailing me out. So I have to stop doing that. I have to stop repeating my history. And so it's important for us that, yes, we go through this and we read, you know, and as less the classes, I'll just talk about the classes I've taught. I've taught classes on judges, and we went through Judith, and we went through 1 Samuel and Judges. And the thing is, we have to really stop and say, okay, we've heard all of this information. We've looked at it, but let's examine it now. Let's really examine it and look at it from the front, from the back, from the top, from the bottom. Let's look at it from different angles, and let's see all the information. Let's learn the lessons we can out of this. And then let's put it away, and we'll go away, and we'll go look at other things. We'll learn some other things. But then, you know what? Okay, now we've learned some other things. Now let's go back and reexamine what we read and what we went through before. Because the more you come back to it, you go away from it, you learn more, you live some, you experience some things, then you come back to it and you start to see more and you get more out of it. And that's how the scriptures are. The Most High, in fact, Christ said that he would bring the living, he'd bring living water. He'd bring the word. It's a living word. It's a breathing, living. It's a spirit. And so it's always active, but there's always more for us to learn. And so let's go back over that so that we can see where we are now and compare it to where we are now, and each of us can see it in our lives as we live. Because here it is that, again, they were in their land. They had wealth. They had everything. Saul was a king. Take Saul. He was the king. Now, he had crops. In fact, we read about how Saul, his son, let me back up. Saul's father had those beautiful horses that when they went away, Saul's father was worried about them because these were prized thoroughbreds. You see how, like, when the Kentucky Derby is shown on TV, those horses are million-dollar horses, some of them more than $1 million for one horse, because they are well-bred, they're well-cared for, they're very valuable animals. These are the type of animals that Saul's father had. And when they left, Saul had to go look for them. Remember, Saul and his servant went out to look for them. Well, the point is, Saul's father owned those kinds of horses. That's the kind of wealth that they had. They had land, they had horses, he had other crops and flocks as well. So Saul's family was wealthy because all the families of Israel were wealthy at the time. And so Saul becomes king. He's got wealth. And then on top of that, he's the king. So why would he be angry at David? Why is he chasing David? Well, he went off. Saul became king. We talked about how he was impatient, how he was egotistical. He did things he wasn't supposed to do because of his ego, because of his impulsiveness. And Samuel explained to him, hey, the Most High chose you, but you started tripping for no reason. You lacked faith. And because of these things, you stepped out of your lane and were trying to do things that you were not supposed to be doing. And because of that, the Most High is not with you anymore. He's going to choose David. He chose David. So Saul got upset, even though Samuel, who was a prophet, who was a man of the Most High, and who Saul knew that Samuel, the Most High, spoke to Samuel. And when Samuel told him, listen, the Most High is not with you anymore. I'm not going to see you again. I'm out of here. David's going to be the king. Saul couldn't accept that. And through his ego, he chased after David to kill him. But he had no reason to do that. You see, and that's what we have to look at is the Most High gave Saul everything. And he still, down to the very end, he was so bitter. He allowed his ego and his jealousy and his anger and his selfishness to control him, to rule him. We have to stop and look at that and understand that. I don't have the wealth that Saul had. I'm certainly not the king that Saul is or Saul was. And I don't have that perspective, that understanding. Saul was a mighty man. He was flawed, yes, but he was a great man. That's why the Most High chose him in the first place. Don't get it twisted. Okay? Saul was still a great man. Even to the point, that's why David had killed the guy who actually killed Saul, because David was like, and David did not kill Saul because he's like, far be it for me to kill the Most High's anointed. The Most High still anointed Saul. Saul was flawed. Saul allowed his flaws to take over him. Yes, and he made poor decisions. Yes, he did. But the Most High still chose him initially. So don't get it twisted. Don't misunderstand that. And so I, as an individual, each of us as individuals have to look at that as one example and say, you know, even though my circumstance is different than Saul's, and yet it's not in the sense that Saul didn't apply humility when he should have. Saul didn't check his ego. Saul didn't repent as he should have and ask the Most High to guide him. So now when I come to situations, I don't have to have lived in the time of Saul. I don't have to have been in the same situation as Saul. But what I can learn from that is that I need to check my ego. I need to ask the Most High to help me to overcome when my jealousy or my ego or my frustration get in the way. When they start to raise up, I need to look to the Most High and ask him to help guide me in that. I need to work on checking myself and remaining humble and making sure that I conduct myself appropriately. That's why we read this, so we can see that those things do apply to me. And then we go along with David, and we read about how David and the situation with Bathsheba, how the Most High checked him but forgave him because David did repent. Even though he did make more than one mistake in that circumstance. And so we have to look at ourselves and say, okay, you know what? And that's why I say, the more that you think about these things, the more that they're on your mind and you practice these things in your head, the better you'll be able to apply them when you need to. And that's why I say you can't go around just watching The Bachelor and The Bachelorette and Big Brother and Love Island and whatever all that other stuff is that's on TV all the time. You can't just play stuff where, you know, you can't play the radio and it's just there, I'm going to do this to you and I'm going to do that to you and my booty this and your booty that. And we can't just talk about all of that and listen to all of that and think that, okay, I need to converse with the Most High now and think that that's going to be right at our fingertips. We have to practice and rehearse. The scriptures say rehearse the righteous acts. And so we need to take the time and practice that more frequently because things happen quickly. That's why you see because they have channels on YouTube and TikTok where people and, you know, other social media where all they do is people just post videos about people being Karens, as we call them. And that stuff happens quickly where all of a sudden, you know, you're sitting there and you hear somebody and they're like, you didn't make my sandwich right. And people go from 0 to 100 in the blink of an eye. You know, you're on the road, you're driving. People have road rage. It flips. It's like when you flip a light switch. And so we have to practice maintaining ourselves. And we practice maintaining ourselves by reading the scriptures and meditating on them and thinking about what is it I'm listening to. Because when we read about Samuel, we read about David, we read about these things, it's not just about the story we're reading. It's also about how do we apply that? How do we apply that to our lives? What did they do wrong? What did they do right? And what did they do wrong? You see, because if somebody does something right, I can say, okay, you know what? I want to apply that because that worked. What was it that Abraham did that made the Most High say, that's my friend? I want to do that. I want to be like that. And then what is it that Saul did that made Samuel say, the Most High is against you, and I'm leaving, and I'm never going to be around you again? Whatever that is that Saul did, I don't want to do that. I want to avoid that action. And the only way that I'm going to know what Abraham did right to get the Most High's blessing and the Most High's friendship, the only way I'll know what he did is I have to go in and read about it and think about it and meditate on it and read it again and think about it some more and meditate on it some more. And then once I've done that over and over and over, I start to apply it to my life. And that helps me to change my life for the better. And whatever it is that Saul did to make Samuel say the Most High is against you and that I'm leaving, I, Samuel, am leaving and I'll never see you again, whatever it was that Saul did, I need to find out. I have to read about it and think about it and meditate on it and then read it again and meditate some more and apply and take whatever it is that he did wrong and say, okay, I've got to get that out of me. I've got to avoid doing that. And if I am doing it, I have to get it out. And that's why we go over these scriptures. And that's why I don't like to read fast. And I know I talk a lot, but we have to really, it's life. This is real. We're reading stuff that happened thousands of years ago, but yet you see, when you really stop to think about it, these things still apply to our lives. There are aspects of it because these were humans, just like we're human, and they had the flaws, they had the faults, but they also had the potential, just like we have the potential and the faults and the flaws. We have the good and the bad. And it's a matter of how we apply that, how we choose to apply ourselves and what we take responsibility for and how we deal and operate. And so that's why it's important for us to really stop and think. And look, you don't have to have a bunch of degrees. You don't have to be a straight-A student. You don't have to have gone to a fancy university. I don't care if you dropped out in second grade. I don't care if you're a mechanic or if you're an engineer. If you're a neurosurgeon or if you're a school teacher, that's not, see, the Most High didn't say any of that. The Most High didn't say you have to be a brain surgeon in order to understand the words. The Most High didn't say you have to be an aircraft mechanic. You have to be a plumber to understand this. He didn't say any of that. But he did say you have to be open-minded and you have to work toward being righteous. And you can do that no matter what your occupation is, what your age, your occupation, your status in life, whatever's in your bank account. All of that, it doesn't matter. The Most High is working with that. That's why I said Christ was the friend of sinners and publicans. So but then he had the rich guy who came to him, and the rich guy said, I've done all that you said. And Christ said, okay, sell everything you got and come follow me. So it wasn't about the money. He said, if you've done what you're supposed to do, you can still come on, let go of all the other stuff and go to the next level. That was the next level he had to go to. Unfortunately, the guy was like, you know what? I can do all this other stuff, Christ, but I can't do that. And so that was where he met his limit. Don't meet your limit. Go beyond your limit in righteousness, of course. So now, just to recap, to make it kind of refocus, keep us in mind, keep everybody in mind that the deeper level of what we're reading to understand what took place. Yes, we are. But at the same time, we're reading so that we can gain an understanding of the inner workings of man, the inner workings of human, the human nature, and how we can apply the good to ourselves and remove the bad from ourselves. So we're in the book of 2 Samuel. We're at chapter 20. Now, at this point, David has chased Absalom. David went to war. Absalom came and went to war against David. And because David had forced himself upon his half-sister, Tamar. And then he killed his half-brother. And David exiled. He went into exile for several years. He came back. David brought him back. But he didn't allow Absalom back into his home immediately. And after a couple of years, Absalom went after Joab and burned Joab's crops to get his attention. And he was upset because he was like, well, if I'm not going to see my dad, why did he bring me back here to this land? And so he wound up taking over David's throne temporarily to cause he took several years and he was saying some slick words to the people and he got a lot of Israel to turn against David. And David went on the run. Now, another thing before we continue, why did that happen? That was part of the situation that happened with David back when, with the whole Bathsheba situation, because David took another man's wife, and then on top of that, he had the man killed. And so that was prophesied. The prophet Nathan came and told him, because you did this, then these things are going to happen to you. And so that's part of the punishment David had to deal with. It occurred because of what he did with Bathsheba in taking Uriah's wife. And so now what we're going to start in is that Absalom's been killed by Joab, and David is now coming back to the land. He's the king. He's going to restore his throne, restore himself. 2 Samuel chapter 20 and verse 1. And there was a man, it happened to be there was a man of Belial, whose name was Sheba, the son of Bichri, a Benjamite. And he blew a trumpet. Now, first of all, you'll have to excuse me, the allergies are pretty bad today. There was a man of Belial. Belial was one of the heathen gods. So he was an evil man. He was a nigger. When it says there's a man of Belial, that means basically he's a man of the devil. There's a man of this demon, Belial. So he was already a wicked dude. Okay, this man, Sheba, a Benjamite. And he blew a trumpet and said, we have no part in David, neither have we inheritance in the son of Jesse. Every man to his tents, O Israel. So every man of Israel went up from after David and followed Sheba, the son of Bichri. But the men of Judah clave unto their king, from Jordan even to Jerusalem. So now it says from Jordan to Jerusalem. You have to understand the geography of Israel, that the Jordan ran through Israel. It was sort of toward the eastern side, but it was still within the land. And there were people, the people of Judah lived to the west of the river. And then there were some of the members of Israel, the other 9.5 tribes, lived to the east of it. Not all the 9.5 tribes were on the east of it, but it was a border. And now here what we see was something that was a continuing theme through Israel. When the Most High gave us the laws, part of the intention, when you read, and it would take time to go through it, and we'll get there eventually, but part of the thing was that the Most High wanted the 12 tribes to be unified. Because, yes, you're different tribes, but you're all family. But there was this division. Israel has always had divisions amongst themselves. It's an us versus them mentality. And so the children of Israel considered themselves different than the children of Judah. And so instead of looking at it as we're family, they were looking at it as, well, we ain't down with David. There was a big argument that went place after David took down, Absalom. And so it was an us, them. And so that's why this man of Belial, see, so he's already an evil dude. and he's not about the unity of Israel. He's not about the unification of the people or being one, being together. And so he blew a big trumpet to get people's attention and said, we ain't got nothing to do with David. So to your tents, meaning everybody back to your home, oh, Israel. Instead of let's gather together under David, they're like, nah, we're going back to our place. We're going back to our land. But then the men of Judah didn't help by saying, well, we're going to go with David over here. And so it's this argument that popped up continually amongst Israel, and we see it amongst our people now, whether it's about the dark skin and the light skin, it's about the hair texture, even about our own neighborhoods. Well, I'm from Memphis, and brothers from Memphis are like this, and well, I'm from Chicago, and brothers from Chicago are like that. So we have this, or we say that, you know, well, the brothers in Georgia, this is how they act. And then, you know, well, the brothers in New York act like this. And so it's all of this identity foolishness is what it is. Instead of looking at themselves as one people under the Most High, there's all this division. And we have to get away from that. We have to make sure that we maintain ourselves, because you hear it amongst, well, I'm part of this camp and then brothers are part of that camp. Well, the Most High is not divided. And so we have to, that is, and I'm not saying it's an easy fix, but what I am saying is when you stop and look, when you hear those kinds of words, you have to really maintain yourself and recognize, well, that's divisive. That's not what the Most High is about. When the Most High said, gather yourselves together, O nation, not desired, he didn't say, O camp, not desired, or O individual. He's looking at his children. Christ didn't come and say, well, I'm going to save the brothers in Jerusalem, but I'm not going to save the brothers in Bethlehem. The Christ didn't say, if the Most High's people are in Ephesus, which isn't even in the land of Israel, then we're not going to deal with them. When you go to the New Testament, you see that, you know, you look at Peter, Paul, and the other apostles. I know most of the writings we look at, we read, it's a lot of Peter and Paul. But we had James, John, we had other brothers who were out there teaching. They even came along and taught for a while. But the thing is, you see that they were letters to the Romans. Well, Rome was not in Israel. Okay, the people of the Cappadocians, Cappadocia was in the land of Turkey. You know, Ephesians, that Ephesus was in Turkey. There were people in Greece. There were people, so they were in other parts of Israel and in other countries altogether. There are people down in Egypt. And so we bring that to today and we realize that the divisiveness is not necessary. That's against what Christ is talking about. So we can't, each of us can't allow ourselves to get caught up into that. We already know there are too many differences between us now. So we don't need to encourage it. We don't need to promote it. We don't need to be a part of that. We have to figure out, each of us as individuals have to look into ourselves and figure out how can I as an individual get away from that kind of talk? How can I not allow that to taint my opinion, my thought, my actions, my responses? I have to work on that so that I can help the next person work on it. Because that's definitely not what the Most High is talking about. So what we're reading here is this man said, well, we don't have anything to do with David, and we don't have an inheritance with the son of Jesse. So it said, every man to his tent, O Israel. 2 Samuel 20 and chapter 2. So every man of Israel went up from after David and followed Sheba, the son of Bichri. But the men of Judah even to their king, from Jordan even to Jerusalem. And David came to his house at Jerusalem. And the king took the 10 women, his concubines, who he had left to keep the house, and put them in ward, and fed them, but went not in unto them. So they were shut up unto the day of their death, living in widowhood. See, after Absalom had slept with them, David didn't sleep with them again, even though they were his concubines. Now he took them, and he put them away, but he took care of them. But he wasn't going to mess with them again. So they lived in widowhood. Then said the king to Amasa, "Assemble me the men of Judah within 3 days, and be thou here present." So he said, "Go get the fighting men of Judah, and bring them, and you come too." And David said to Abishai, "Now shall Sheba, the son of Bichri, do us more harm than did Absalom. Take thou thy Lord's servants and pursue after him, lest he get him fenced cities and escape us." So see, he's like, this dude, Sheba, he's stirred up the people against us. And he's going to do more harm than Absalom did in stirring up the people. And so he said, chase him down and get him before he gets into a fenced city. A fenced city is, it doesn't have a fence like you have in your front yard. It's a city behind gates. It has gates and walls that can withstand a siege. And if he gets in one of those, they might not ever be able to get hold of him, is what it's talking about. Verse 7. And when they went out after him, Joab's men, and the Cherethites, and the Pelethites, and all the mighty men, and they went out of Jerusalem to pursue after Sheba, the son of Bichri. So all the mightiest men of Judah went out to go pursue this guy and get him. When they were at the great stone, which is in Gibeon, Amasa went before them. And Joab's garment that he had put on was girded unto him, and upon it a girdle with a sword fastened upon his loins in the sheath thereof. And as he went forth, it fell out. And Joab said to Amasa, "Art thou in health, my brother?" And Joab took Amasa by the beard, and with the right hand, to kiss him. But Amasa took no heed to the sword that was in Joab's hand. So he smote him therewith in the fifth rib, and shed out his bowels to the ground, and struck him not again, and he died. So Joab and Abishai, his brother, pursued after Sheba, the son of Bichri. So Joab had this garment he was on, and they were out, and it was girded. He had this garment on, and a sword was on his side, and he went forth. It fell out. So he made it in such a way. He put it on in a way that the sword would fall out. He probably leaned forward or something, and the sword fell off his clothes. And Amasa looked up. Now, if you remember, Amasa had killed back when David and – because Amasa was he was with Saul. See, this is why we have to read this stuff. So Amasa was with Saul. He was one of Saul's men. He was Saul's general. And – if you remember, they were out fighting, and Joab had two brothers, and one of his brothers got killed by Amasa. Now, that was years ago, because when the fighting ended, David took Amasa, and David said, "We're going to squash all this, and it's going to be all good amongst all the people that are left." And so he ended all that after Saul died, after Saul was killed. But Joab never forgot. And Joab has been holding a grudge for years. He never forgot. He was just biding his time until the right moment. So what happened was he came to embrace Amasa. He was picking up his sword, which he pretended had fallen out on accident. He picked up the sword. That's why Amasa didn't pay attention to the sword, because here it is. They're supposed to be in the same army chasing after this other dude, Sheba. So when Joab made his sword fall out, he picked it up, and then he saw Amasa, and he went to embrace the brother, and he stabbed him. And see, when they say the fifth rib, when you look at the body, basically the fifth rib is the heart, is what he's talking about. And so they went in, and he shoved it right in his fifth rib. So basically, he killed him. He shoved his sword in and killed him. He killed him. He shoved it in once, and that was the end of that. And then it said he and his brother Abishai went off to pursue Sheba. Okay? So he's held this grudge for years. So you can see, even though Joab is David's David's general, and he's his he's one of his mighty men, he's one of his advisors, and one of David's friends, the thing is, that negative was still there. He held a grudge for years. He held a grudge, and then he murdered his brother. And that's why I said we have to really read this stuff and meditate on it and go through it and realize that we have to work hard to purge the junk. And I call it junk because jealousy is junk. Hatred is junk. Anxiety is junk. Greed is junk. It's all clouding us. It's clogging up the pipes. And when I say it's clogging up the pipes, it's spiritual. It's you know what? It's spiritual constipation. It's got us full of you know what. That's what it is. It spiritually has us constipated, and we have to work to purge. Just like if you're physically constipated, you know, of course there are medications you can take over the counter from a pharmacy, but in the past we would take herbs. There are herbs you can take, and you still can. There are herbs and natural cures for that you can take to clear out your physical bowels. Well, now we have to clear out our spiritual bowels, all of the you know what, the crap that we're full of spiritually, because that's what we've been fed through the information we've gotten in society today. And we have to purge all of that stuff, all of our opinion and all of our beliefs. We have to purge that stuff to ingest what's right. Because Joab, over all that time, instead of praying to the Most High to guide him and to help him, and this was back when the Most High was dealing directly with Israel, he had a direct pipeline to the Most High. And yet he would not allow that. He did not develop that relationship with the Most High. He didn't encourage it. He held on to that. And it's a darkness that was in him for all those years, to the point where he murdered a man. After years, Amasa wasn't even thinking about that. That was a long time ago. And so that's why we have to be aware of ourselves, because this stuff, it consumes you. And the next thing you know, you're doing stuff you're not supposed to be doing, and you don't even care. That's the thing. He just killed the man, and then he didn't care. He and his brother took off and went on about their business. Okay? Went on about their business. So we're in 2 Samuel chapter 20 and verse 11. And one of Joab's men stood by him and said, "He that favoreth Joab and he that is for David, let him go after Joab." And Amasa wallowed in blood in the midst of the highway. And when the man saw that all the people stood still, he removed Amasa out of the highway into the field and cast a cloth upon him. When he saw that everyone that came by him stood still. And when he was removed out of the highway, all the people went on after Joab to pursue after Sheba, the son of Bichri. And he went through all the tribes of Israel unto Abel and to Beth Machah. And all the Barites and all they were gathered together and went also after him. So let me back this up here. So what happens is Joab stabbed him once in the heart and then took off. He and his brother Abishai, they took off. And Amasa was still laying there. He hadn't expired completely, but he wallowed in blood in the midst of the highway. So they were on the path, on the road, on the trail, and he's laying there in blood. And you've seen, and we know most of us have not seen a person dying in front of us. Some of us may have. But when you see TV or movies, which is our best depiction, but the person's laying there and they are dying, but they haven't yet died. And so everybody, all the army who was coming after them, when they came up to the body, they stood there watching. Now, they knew they couldn't do anything, so it's not like they stopped and they were going to fix him, but they were like, man, because they knew an iniquity had happened. This was a tragedy, a sin that's taken place. So they're all standing there watching like, oh, my gosh, look what just took place. What is going on? And so that's when the one of Joab's men, when he said, he that favoreth Joab. So whoever, oh, y'all, if you down with Joab. And then he said, he that favoreth Joab, and said, and he that is for David, let him go after Joab. So if you're following, if you're with Joab, if you're with David, let's go. And so what he did was he covered him with a cloth. He put him over on the side, took him off the highway, put him and covered him with a cloth in the field so that people couldn't see him. So because he's basically like, focus, people. Let's get back to the task at hand. Let's focus. And so then they all refocused and went to chase after Sheba. But don't worry, the Most High knows what happened, and so we'll get back to it. But they all stopped because they realized, they were like, oh, my gosh, I can't believe what just took place. Did you see what just happened? And they're watching him. And so that's why the guy was like, nope, let's get it. Let's get moving. So he pulled him off the side of the road, covered his body with a cloth, and then let's go. We got to get back to the mission at hand. And so they went back to chasing him. And so they said he went through, and so this dude, Sheba, went through all the tribes of Israel unto Abel. So he was going all around because he was trying to gather people against David. But remember, he was a man of Belial. He was a wicked man. So he was trying to gather people against him. Now, and remember, but he was, even though he was a man of Belial, he was an Israelite. So again, as I said when we began the class today, he was of Israel, but he followed wickedness. And so he was about, let me go against what David's doing. I can't stand David, and I'm going to stand against what he's all about. And so he was going through the land trying to stir up people against David. And, yes, I'm going to reiterate, let's remember, they were in the land. They had crops and flocks and everything. And when the Most High told Moses, and then even Joshua, after everybody got their land, Joshua repeated, he said, let every man go forth and live in peace. Everybody had the ability to just be living in peace. Well, you had your land, I had my land, and we all had our own crops. And you know, we could be neighborly to one another. And all was good. But instead, people are stirring up stuff amongst one another. And that's because of jealousy and ego and hatred and negative and allowing yourself to be overcome by those emotions instead of looking at, hey, I'm blessed to have my own land, my own home, my land, my family, my crops. I have a way of sustaining myself and my family. We live very comfortably. We've got plenty of money and possessions, and we're all good. So all they had to do was praise the Most High on the days the Most High told them to and be grateful to the Most High and live at peace with one another. But instead, because they have not overcome their ego, they haven't overcome their negative, their impulsiveness, their greed, their jealousy, because they haven't overcome those things, then we have all this strife stirring up. And there was no need for it. There was absolutely no need for any of them to be involved in any of this. And that's why you have to practice your meditation and practice developing and working on developing your relationship with the Most High so that when stuff stirs up, you can overcome that stuff. First, you have to overcome it within yourself. And then you can overcome it, the external portions of things that come at you. Again, first you have to overcome these things within yourself. If I can overcome my ego, then when someone says something that I disagree with, I don't have to sit in my head and say, oh, that brother's stupid, or that brother just don't know. I know better than that brother does because I got, see, if I overcome my ego, then when someone else says something to me, I can agree, I can disagree. Those things are okay. It's okay to agree with someone. It's okay to disagree with someone. but it's how you act after that. I don't have to sit and think, well, that brother's off because he said this and I don't agree with it. No. I can very easily say, okay, brother, I accept what you said. I see things differently, but that's okay. And if we choose to have a conversation about it, we can be rational about it, and I can respect that brother, and he can respect me. And even if he decides he doesn't want to respect me, I don't have to worry about it because it's not about my ego, because I've overcome my jealousy. I've overcome my ego. See, that's what you got to work on. It's like the saying, there's a saying that goes, other people's opinion of me has nothing to do with me. And when you think about it, that's very true. Because what somebody else thinks about me has nothing to do with me. That's what they think. That's their opinion, you see. And so if I can live my life with that in mind, then other people can't bother me. And that's what Christ applied. That's why other people didn't bother him. The only time things bothered him is when people came against what the Most High was about. That's why when he went into the synagogue and they were exchanging money, they had the money changers that were up in the synagogue. He went in there and turned their tables up and raised all chaos. He was like, this is wickedness that you're doing. And it wasn't just because they were being wicked in the synagogue. It's because they were leading the people astray into wickedness. And he was like, no, we're not going to stand for this. And the other time he got frustrated with the apostles, because the apostles were so busy arguing about who's the biggest apostle, who's the best apostle. I'm the top apostle. No, I'm the best apostle. And Christ got sick of it. And he told them, listen, I'm not worried about all that. Just go do the work. Be the apostles. If you're the best apostle, go be an apostle. Just go do the work. That's what you need to worry about. You don't need to worry about who's best or who's the baddest. With Michael Jackson said, who's bad? Don't matter. None of that matters. What matters is getting the work done. And so that's what we have to look at, is these little things that we get involved in day to day. We get jealous or we get angry, or, oh, well, this brother said this, or over there they're teaching that. That's not what's important. Let that go. And Israel wasn't doing that. That's what we're reading here in 2 Samuel. And so this man, Sheba, instead of minding his business, and he could, because it was nothing wrong if Sheba decided, you know what, I don't really approve of David as a king. He's not for me. I'm not down with that choice. He could feel that way. He needed to shut his mouth and go on home. Because keep in mind, it was the Most High who appointed David. You see, so instead of going home and praying about it and asking the Most High to help him understand better, or at least better accept the Most High's choice, so he wasn't fighting against David. See, in his mind, he was stirring up people against David. But the Most High appointed David. So who was Sheba really fighting against? He was fighting against the Most High's decision, because that was the Most High's decision to make David the king. So his battle really wasn't with David. It was with the Most High. You see, that's what we have to look at. Is Sheba was in his head, he was fighting against David. He was going to stir up the people against David. But if he was stirring up the people against David, and David, it was the Most High's decision to put David in the position of being king, then Sheba is now stirring up the people against the Most High's decision. You see how deep that gets? And that's why we have to stop and really check ourselves. Because we're out here in the world doing things and being a certain way. You're on the road and you're driving and people are, you know, somebody's driving slow. And you get upset. And you're calling them names, and you're showing them that they're number one, and y'all know what finger that means, and you're just doing all this stuff, and you're so mad at this person, and you have no idea if maybe that person has gotten some bad news, maybe that person's having some distress, or maybe the Most High has caused that person to slow down, because up ahead, if you speed through the way you're driving, you're going to go through the intersection and some drunk driver who's being chased by the police is going to hit you at 100 miles an hour and kill you. And the Most High just saved you from that. And you may never know that's what happened. But you're so busy fighting against what the Most High's got going on. See, we always like to use And this is something we got to stop, because this is what Christians do. This is what Christianity has taught. People say, oh, well, my God, he protects me. My God knows what happens. And you say that, but you don't really think of it. These Christians don't think of the fact that the Most High does know what's going on. So when your grandmama dies and you say, why, Lord, why did you take my grandma? Wait a minute, don't you know the Most High knows your grandma? If the Most High knows everything, he knows everything when things are going right for you. He knows everything when things are going wrong for you. He knows everything when you are running late and you're rushing through traffic. He knows. You can't apply the Most High and be grateful to the Most High when in your mind things are going well, and then walk away from the Most High when things are being difficult. He's still the Most High. And he still deserves your thanks and praise, whether you're having a good day or whether you're having a bad day. And that's what Sheba didn't understand. And that's why Sheba was running around trying to stir up people, because his focus was on David. But the Most High said, David is a man after mine heart. David is a man that I chose. So Sheba didn't even realize he's battling against the Most High, because he's battling against the Most High's anointed. And so we're in 2 Samuel chapter 20 and verse 15. So at this point, Joab has killed Amasa, and he and his brother chased after, they're still chasing after Sheba. Sheba's gone through the land. He's going all over the place trying to stir up the people against David. The men have followed, they're following David's army. They're following Joab. And verse 15, and they came and besieged him, meaning Joab and David's men besieged Sheba in Abel of Beth Maacah. And they cast up a bank against the city, and it stood in the trench. And all the people that were with Joab battered the wall and to throw it down. So the city had a big, had walls around it. City had walls around it, and they built a trench. So it would make it difficult for anybody to try and even get to the city. Well, Joab had them take land, probably filled it with dirt. They filled, and they built what we would call a ramp up to the wall. So they covered the trench. They filled in part of the trench so they could go across, and they battered the wall. So they're ramming it, trying to break down the wall of this walled city. Verse 16, then cried a wise woman out of the city, hear, hear, say, I pray you, unto Joab, come near hither, that I may speak with thee. And when he was come near unto her, the woman said, art thou Joab? And he answered, I am he. Then she said unto him, hear the words of thine handmaid. And he answered, I do hear. Then she spake, saying, they were wont to speak in old time, saying, they shall surely ask counsel at Abel. And so they ended the matter. I am one of them that are peaceable and faithful in Israel. Thou seekest to destroy a city and a mother in Israel. Why wilt thou swallow up the inheritance of the Lord? And Joab answered and said, far be it from me that I should swallow up or destroy. The matter is not so, but a man of Mount Ephraim, Sheba, the son of Bichri, my name, hath lifted up his hand against the king, even against David. Deliver him only, and I will depart from the city. And the woman said unto Joab, behold, his head shall be thrown down to thee over the wall. This wise woman said to him, listen, Joab, listen to me, Joab, why are you trying to kill? I'm a faithful woman. I believe in the Most High, and I'm faithful to the Most High. So why would you destroy the city of people? We've not done anything against David or against you. And so that's when Joab explained, no, I'm not here to kill everybody. I'm just here to kill Sheba. I'm here to get Sheba, because he lifted his hand. He's committed iniquity against the Most High, against David. And so we're here to get him. We're not here for everybody. If you turn him over, then we're good to go. And we will leave you alone. So the woman said, listen, don't worry. His head's going to be thrown over the wall to you. She said, we'll get him, and we'll send his head over. Verse 22, 2 Samuel 20 and 22. Then the woman went unto all the people in her wisdom, and they cut off the head of Sheba, the son of Bichri, and cast it out to Joab. And he blew a trumpet, and they retired from the city, every man to his tent. And Joab returned to Jerusalem unto the king. Now Joab was over all the host of Israel, and Benaiah, the son of Jehoiada, was over the Cherethites and over the Pelethites. And Adoram was over the tribute, and Jehoshaphat, the son of Ahilud, was recorder. So Adoram was over the tribute. Now, okay, first of all, Jehoiada was over the Cherethites and over the Pelethites, and they were special, basically like special forces. They were a special division of David's. And Adoram was over the tribute, and Jehoshaphat, the son of Ahilud, was recorder. So he, Adoram was over the tribute, meaning the money that they collected for David, basically over his money, over his possessions, his all the gold and things that he collected. And Jehoshaphat was recorder, so he was keeping records, writing all down all the things that took place. And Sheba was scribe, and Zadok and Abiathar were the priests, and Ira also, the Jerahite, was a chief ruler about David. Verse 21. Then there was a famine in the days of David 3 years, year after year. And David inquired of the Lord, and the Lord answered, it is for Saul and for his bloody house, because he slew the Gibeonites. And the king called the Gibeonites and said unto them, now the Gibeonites were not of the children of Israel, but were of the remnant of the Amorites, and the children of Israel had sworn unto them, and Saul sought to slay them in his zeal to the children of Israel and Judah. So basically, the children of Israel had given their word. They had a treaty with the Gibeonites, is what happened. The children of Israel had a treaty with the Gibeonites, and Saul, when he was trying to show himself and prove himself, it was all ego. He was trying to prove himself to the Israelites and to Judah, and he said, well, I'm going to kill the Gibeonites. And so because he had gone in and caused destruction amongst them, the Most High caused the famine in Israel. And so David, verse 3, wherefore David said unto the Gibeonites, what shall I do for you, and wherewith shall I make the atonement, that you may bless the inheritance of the Lord? So David said, listen, what can I do to make it right? Saul did this stuff that was wrong. He came up against you. He killed a lot of your folks. What can I do to make it right? Verse 5. And they answered the king, the man that consumed us and that devised against us that we should be destroyed from remaining in any of the coasts of Israel, let 7 men of his sons be delivered unto us, and we will hang them up unto the Lord in Gibeah of Saul, whom the Lord did choose. And the king said, I will give them. So they said, bring 7 of his descendants, and we will hang them in the Lord, in the house. They're going to hang them. So we require a sacrifice. Now, an interesting point here is that, and this is what's more important, is David went to them and said, look, you were done wrong, and I want to make it right. So you see, David had humility. David went to the Most High. He asked, what can I do to end this famine? Because things are tough on us. How can I fix this? And when the Most High told him what he needed to do, David didn't hesitate. David didn't say, well, I don't know. I'm, you know, this ain't my deal. maybe there's got to be something else I can do. He didn't hesitate. He didn't go backwards on his word. He didn't do any of that stuff. He said, okay, let me figure out what I can do to make it right. He said, what can I do to make this right? And so that was the important part of this thing, is he showed humility, because he's the king. And so David was above the Gibeonites, but David was not above the word of the Most High. And the Most High told him what he needed to do. And he told him why the thing was happening. So David had to humble himself to the Gibeonites and say, hey, I want to make this right. And that to create peace in this situation. And so we're at 2 Samuel chapter 21 and verse 7. And because in verse 6, he said, I'll give them. But the king spared Mephibosheth, the son of Jonathan, the son of Saul, because of the Lord's oath that was between them, because David and Jonathan, the son of Saul. Because remember, excuse me, David and Jonathan were very good friends. And David had an oath with Jonathan. They were brothers. And so when Jonathan died, David took care of Mephibosheth, Jonathan's son. But there were other descendants of Saul that David said, well, we got to sacrifice him because this is what happened. Saul cursed his household by his behavior. His descendants were cursed based on this. Verse 8, but the king took the two sons of Rizpah, the daughter of Ahiah, whom she bare unto Saul, Armoni and Mephibosheth, and the five sons of Michal, the daughter of Saul, whom she brought up for Adriel, the son of Barzillai, and the Maholathite. And he delivered them into the hands of the Gibeonites, and they hanged them in the hill before the Lord. And they fell all seven together and were put to death in the days of harvest, in the first days, in the beginning of the barley harvest. And Rizpah, the daughter of Ahiah, took sackcloth and spread it for her upon the rock from the beginning of harvest until water dropped upon them out of heaven, and suffered neither the birds of the air to rest on them by day, nor the beasts of the field by night. So she laid out sackcloth, like potato cloth, basically, and laid it out on the rocks, and she wouldn't let any animal touch it by day or night. From the time that they went out to the harvest, they sacrificed them, from the time of the beginning of the harvest until the rain fell. Verse 11, and it was told David what Rizpah, the daughter of Ahiah, the concubine of Saul, had done. And David went and took the bones of Saul and the bones of Jonathan, his son, from the men of Jabesh Gilead, which had stolen them from the street of Bethshan, where the Philistines had hanged them, when the Philistines had slain Saul in Gilboa. And he brought up from thence the bones of Saul and the bones of Jonathan, his son. And they gathered the bones of them that were hanged. And the bones of Saul and Jonathan, his son, buried they in the country of Benjamin, in Zelah, in the sepulcher of Kish, his father. And they performed all that the king commanded. And after that, God was entreated for the land. So after all that took place, the Most High was appeased. So that ended the famine, but it took 3 years. They were at famine for 3 years. Verse 15. Moreover, the Philistines had yet war again with Israel, and David went down and his servants with him and fought against the Philistines, and David waxed faint. So David went, and when it says David and his servants, that's not talking about the servants in the house, like the butlers and the maids and all them. When it says his servants, it meant the men of war who served him. So he and his army went down, and it said David waxed faint. So David got tired. In the midst of the battle, he got weak. And Ish-bi-benob, and Ishbi-Benob, which was of the sons of the giant, the weight of whose spear weighed 300 shekels of brass in weight. He, being girded with a new sword, thought to have slain David, but Abishai, the son of Zeruiah, succored him and smote the Philistine and killed him. So Abishai came to David's rescue. Then the men of David swear unto him, saying, Thou shalt go no more out with us to battle, that thou quench not the light of Israel. So David was getting too old to go out to war. And it came to pass after this that there was again a battle with the Philistines at Gob. Then Sibekiah the Hushathite slew Soph, which was of the sons of the giant. And there was again a battle in Gob with the Philistines, where Elhanan, the son of Jaar-Eo-Egim, a Bethlehemite, slew the brother of Goliath, the Gittite, the staff of whose spear was like a weaver's beam. And there was yet a battle in Gath, where there was a man of great stature. He had on every hand six fingers, and on every foot six toes, 4 and 20 in number. And he also was born to the giant. And when he defied Israel, Jonathan, the son of Shemaiah, the brother of David, slew him. These four were born to the giant in Gath, and fell by the hand of David and by the hand of his servants. So it's talking about Goliath and these men. They were sons of the giant. They were Goliath's children, Goliath's sons, and how they were defeated. Now, keep in mind that the Most High, through Samuel had told, I think it was Samuel, it was either Samuel or Nathan, but the prophet, the Most High sent a prophet to David and said, you know, because of his conduct, and this goes back to him dealing with Bathsheba, he said, you're going to be at war always. He said, you'll find no peace in your land, in your household during your rule. You'll be king, but there's always going to be some kind of war going on with you. So he was not at peace for long. There might have been periods where he wasn't at war in that moment, but there was always another war coming for the rest of his life. There was always another battle that he had to deal with. The Most High put that on him because of the way he behaved himself, because he disobeyed the Most High. So that was always a thing. 2 Samuel chapter 22, verse 1. And David spake unto the Lord the words of this song in the day that the Lord had delivered him out of the hand of all his enemies and out of the hand of Saul. And this is a song, you know, most, and I think I've said before, and if you don't know, most of the Psalms were songs. Some of them were poems, but most of them were actual songs. And David was very prolific. He wrote a lot of it. He wrote a lot of songs, a lot of poems. You know, so it shows that, you know, in today's society, it has you think that, you know, a man can't be, if you write poetry or if you write songs, you ain't bad, you ain't tough. And it's like, no, that's not. David was a lover, a father, a warrior, and a songwriter, and a poet, amongst other things. So you can do all of that. All of it. He was very multi-talented. He was also chosen by the Most High for a reason. Verse 2, 2 Samuel 22 and 2. And he said, the Lord is my rock and my fortress and my deliverer. The God of my rock, in him will I trust. He is my shield and the horn of my salvation, my high tower and my refuge, my Savior. Thou savest me from violence. I will call on the Lord, who is worthy to be praised. So shall I be saved from mine enemies. When the waves of death compassed me, the floods of ungodly men made me afraid. The sorrows of hell compassed me about. The snares of death prevented me. In my distress, I called upon the Lord, and cried to my God, and he did hear my voice out of his temple, and my cry did enter into his ears. Then the earth shook and trembled. The foundations of heaven moved and shook because he was wroth. Then there went up a smoke out of his nostrils, and fire out of his mouth devoured. Coals were kindled by it. He bowed the heavens also and came down, and darkness was under his feet. And he rode upon a cherub and did fly. And he was seen upon the wings of the wind. And he made darkness, pavilions around about him, dark waters and thick clouds of the sky. Through the brightness before him were coals of fire kindled. The Lord thundered from heaven, and the Most High uttered his voice. And he sent out arrows and scattered them, lightning, and discomfited them. And the channels of the sea appeared. The foundations of the world were discovered at the rebuking of the Lord, at the blast of the breath of his nostrils. He sent from above. He took me. He drew me out of many waters. He delivered me from my strong enemy and from them that hated me, for they were too strong for me. They prevented me in the day of my calamity, but the Lord was my stay. He brought me forth also into a large place. He delivered me because he delighted in me. The Lord rewarded me according to my righteousness. According to the cleanness of my hands hath he recompensed me. For I have kept the ways of the Lord, and have not wickedly departed from my God. For all his judgments were before me, and as for his statutes, I did not depart from them. I was also upright before him, and have kept myself from mine iniquity. Therefore the Lord hath recompensed me according to my righteousness. According to my righteousness, according to my cleanness in his eyesight. And with the merciful, thou wilt show thyself merciful. And with the upright man, thou wilt show thyself upright. And with the pure, thou wilt show thyself pure. And with the froward, thou wilt show thyself unsavory. And the afflicted people, thou wilt save. But thine eyes are upon the haughty, that thou mayest bring them down. For thou art my lamp, O Lord, and the Lord will lighten my darkness. For by thee have I have run through a troop. By my God have I leaped over a wall. Have I leapt over a wall. As for God, his way is perfect. The word of the Lord is tried. He is a buckler to all them that trust in him. For who is God save the Lord? And who is a rock save our God? God is my strength and power, and he maketh my way perfect. He maketh my feet like hinds' feet, and setteth me upon my high places. He teacheth my hands to war, so that a bow of steel is broken by my arms. Thou hast also given me the shield of thy salvation, and thy gentleness hath made me great. Thou hast enlarged my steps under me, so that my feet did not slip. I have pursued mine enemies and destroyed them, and turned not again until I had consumed them. And I have consumed them and wounded them, that they could not arise. Yea, they are fallen under my feet. For thou hast girded me with strength to battle. Them that rose up against me hast thou subdued under me. Thou hast also given me the necks of my enemies, that I might destroy them that hate me. They looked, but there was none to save, even unto the Lord, but he answered them not. Then did I beat them as small as the dust of the earth. I did stamp them as the mire of the street, and did spread them abroad. Thou also hast delivered me from the strivings of my people. Thou hast kept me to be head of the heathen, a people which I knew not, shall serve me. Strangers shall submit themselves unto me. As soon as they hear, they shall be obedient unto me. Strangers shall fade away, and they shall be afraid out of their close places. The Lord liveth, and blessed be my rock, and exalted be the God of the rock of my salvation. It is God that avengeth me, and that bringeth down the people under me, and that bringeth me forth from mine enemies. Thou also hast lifted me up on high above them that rose up against me. Thou hast delivered me from the violent man. Therefore I will give thanks unto thee, O God, among the heathen, and I will sing praises unto thy name. He is the tower of salvation for his king, and showeth mercy to his anointed, unto David and to his seed forevermore. So in the midst of all that, David had gone through, you know, his son dealing with his son assaulting his daughter, killing his other son, and then taking over a period of years using slick, underhanded, unrighteous tactics, negative tactics to raise the people up, raise an army of people against him, an army of his own subjects against him, run him out of his home, assault his concubines. And he went through all that. Then Sheba tried to raise up an army again. He had to deal with all of that. And then the Philistines coming. And yet David wrote this song because he still believed in, had faith in, was obedient to, and still appreciated and respected and was grateful to the Most High. And that's why he wrote that song. So when we think about, you know, the Most High said, David's a man after my own heart, and the Most High appointed David. He appointed and anointed David. Then we have to stop and think, okay, what was it that made David be so worthy? Well, we see in his spirit, in the midst of all these things, he didn't turn away from the Most High. In fact, he leaned in and tried to get closer to the Most High. He openly admitted his love of the Most High, his respect for the Most High, his obedience to the Most High. Even though he committed sin, he still repented of the sin and still kept trying to serve the Most High and be stronger in the Most High. And he developed and worked on strengthening his own relationship with the Most High at all stages of his life. He never gave that up. He never allowed himself to be distracted from that. He never allowed himself to be pulled from that. So those are some of the things that we need to look at and remember, is that we have to constantly work on strengthening, continuing to develop, maintaining our relationship with the Most High, and how we can make it better. Excuse me, how we can do better and make it better and maintain that. And that's a constant. It's like raising a child or growing a plant, like a crop. It's, you have to maintain it. You can't just put a seed in the ground and then say, okay, go grow. You have to constantly come back. You have to water it. You have to check it, make sure it's getting enough sun or not too much sun. You have to make sure it's getting the water it needs. You got to keep the bugs off it. Depending on what kind of plant it is, you might have to put a stick or a rod of steel and a metal in it so that if it's a vine, so it can grow along it, or the vine can, the stick can help support it so it can stand up strong and tall if it needs to be strong and tall. If it's a plant that grows along the ground, you got to make sure that you got to take the weeds away from it all and make sure that even if it's growing on the ground, it's growing properly and growing in the right directions. And it's a lot of things you have to come back to it. If you have a child, if you're raising a child, you have to constantly be checking on your child. You can't just let your child be sitting in the back and you're in the front. You're up here watching The Bachelor and your child's in the back and got a dirty diaper, or your child's a little bit older, but your child's got friends and they back in the room getting ready to burn the house down because they're getting into something. You have to constantly maintain those relationships. Well, so much more our relationship with the Most High. Relationships don't just grow. They don't maintain themselves. They don't grow on their own. You have to maintain your relationship with the Most High, because you know what? The Most High, when he developed his relationship with us, it was 100%. You know, we talk about, oh, keep it 100. Keep it a buck. You got to be for real. You got to stand on business. You know, all these things, we have all these things. The Most High was already on that. He was on business back with Abraham. He was on business with Noah. He developed business. We talking about, I'm going to stand on business. And the Most High made business. Business didn't exist until the Most High said, let there be business. And so we have to understand, and how do I know this? Well, remember, those of us, and if you haven't heard it, you got to go back and look at the archives of classes. We went through Judges, and it was almost every single, it was almost every chapter, three or four times a chapter, it said, and the children of Israel did evil again in the sight of the Most High. And the children of Israel, they rebelled against the Lord. And the children of Israel, they went against God. I mean, it's constant. It was constant. So see, we're the ones who are out of pocket. We're the ones who ran away from the relationship. We're the ones who broke the marriage vow with the Most High. And so we're the ones who have to get right. We're the ones who have to work on our part of the relationship. And it's constant, because look at how many distractions we have in the course of a day. And whatever your thing is, I don't know what your thing is. Maybe it's listening to the radio. Maybe it's watching podcasts. Maybe it's watching TV shows. Maybe it's just playing video games. Maybe it's with anything else, but reading the book, meditating on the book, listening to things about the book. And believe me, it's not about the book itself, but it's about the spirit of what's contained in here. It's the information that we're reading, and we have to digest it. You can look at a plate of food and say, oh, that looks so good. But it's not going to nourish you until you eat the food. And so we can look at the book, but if we're not digesting it, if we don't eat it up, we're not going to get the nourishment. And so that's the thing, is we've got to go to work. We've got to work at this, because we're doing all these things, we're distracting ourselves, and then we're allowing our own individual personality. Well, I'm independent. And the Most High said, you're his servant. You're his child. The Most High said, you're his child. Obey your father. Come on, I'm independent. Without the Most High, you're nothing. He said, you were but beasts. I was a beast before you. It was the word of the Most High that brought you to life. We were beasts before we got the word of the Most High. You know, they say the Neanderthals, we were like cavemen. We were Neanderthals grunting around like wild animals. And so we have to come out of that every single day. We have to work on, you know, I was talking to a brother recently, and it was a really great statement he made. He said, every day I'm sacrificing the beast that's within me. And that's real. That's real. That's what real talk is about. We have to sacrifice that. The beast in us. What is the beast in us? The beast in us is our ego. The beast in us is the jealousy. The beast in us is that grudge we're holding against that sister from 5 years ago because she said something 5 years ago. And that sister ain't even the same person now. And she done went on and has repented and has worked on her relationship with the Most High, and she's a much better person now than she was 5 years ago. But you still stuck on 5 years ago when she said something. And she since apologized, but you don't want to let it go. See, you got to cut that out. You have to slay that within yourself. That's the beast in us. We don't want to let go. What are you holding on to? We have to let go of that stuff. Because if we keep holding on to that, that keeps us in place. The Most High is about our spiritual growth. And so we have to grow beyond that. We have to advance beyond that. And the only person that's going to help you grow through that is you, is you letting go, is you working on developing your relationship with the Most High, who can show you and guide you into that growth that you need. He ain't doing this for us for his help. The Most High don't need us. Somebody say, well, how do you know the Most High don't need us? Well, the Most High told Moses, these people are upsetting me. I'm sick of them. They're acting up. Step aside, Moses, because I'm going to kill all of them, and I'm going to raise up a bunch of rocks, and the rocks are going to worship me. So you are replaceable by a chunk of granite. A hunk of marble could replace you. So we need to get our act together. We're the ones who need to work at, develop, grow in our relationship with the Most High, in overcoming all of these hang-ups that we each have. And we all have them. That's the thing. Now, well, how do you know, Nagaya, that we all have them? Well, Christ said all have fallen short of the glory of the Most High. What are you talking about? We've all fallen short. We were born unto sin. But we don't have to stay in it. Just because you're walking along and you slipped in the mud, that don't mean you just lay in it. You're not a pig. You don't lay in there and just wallow in it. That's what a pig does. That's why they call it a sty. They get in the mud. They like it. It cools their skin. It's calming and relaxing to them. That don't mean because you fall down in the mud, get your behind up and get going. Get up. Keep it moving. That's what we have to work at. We can't stay and sit and meditate. No, I'm mad because this person did this. Let it go. Leave it behind. Move forward. Grow. Because that's not what's important in life. You see, David didn't wallow in what Saul was chasing him for all those years. He had more important things to deal with. He didn't wallow in the sin he committed with Bathsheba. Yes, he committed a sin with Bathsheba and Uriah. He did. He repented, and he had to move forward. He accepted. Now, don't get me wrong. The Most High gave him consequences. But what did he do? He accepted those consequences, but he still had to keep living. His son Absalom came through and acted an absolute fool. He let that go, and he kept moving. Absalom was killed. He let that go and kept moving. Kept fighting with these Philistines. Almost got killed by one of Goliath's sons. But he still kept moving. But he also maintained his humility and understanding, you know what, let me praise the Most High through all of this because the Most High still has me standing here. I'm still breathing. I'm still standing. And sometimes that's what you need to do. Turn off the radio and just say, you know what, let me take 13 seconds here in the parking lot before I walk into this job and just thank the Most High. I know I hate my job. I know I hate the salary that they got me on. But you know what? I'm going to thank the Most High for having me breathe and having me alive and able to function another day. Because life could be worse. And that gives you another opportunity to develop and strengthen your relationship with the Most High. We are in 2 Samuel. Chapter 23 and verse 1. Now these be the last words of David. David, the son of Jesse, said, and the man who was raised up on high and anointed to be of God and be anointed of the God of Jacob and the sweetest psalmist in Israel. He was the sweetest psalmist, the sweetest writer of psalms in Israel, said, the Spirit of the Lord spake by me, and by his word was in and his word was in my tongue. The God of Israel said, the Rock of Israel spake to me. He that ruleth over men must be just, ruling in the fear of God. And he shall be as the light of the morning when the sun riseth, even a morning without clouds, as the tender grass springing out of the earth by clear shining after rain. Although my house be not so with God, Yet he hath made with me an everlasting covenant, ordered in all things, and sure. For this is all my salvation and all my desire, although he make it not to grow. But the sons of Belial shall be all of them as thorns thrust away, because they cannot be taken with hands. But the man that shall touch them must be fenced with iron and the staff of a spear. And they shall be utterly burned with fire in the same place. These be the names of the mighty men whom David had. The Tachmonite that sat in the seat, chief among the captains. The same was Adino, the Esnite. He lift up his spear against 800, whom he slew at one time. So this dude slew 800 men in one battle. And after him was Eleazar, the son of Dodo, the Ahohite, one of the three mighty men with David, when they defied the Philistines that were gathered together to battle, and the men of Israel were gone away. He arose and smote the Philistine until his hand was weary and his hand clave unto the sword. The Lord wrought a great victory that day, and the people returned after him only to spoil. And after him was Shammah, the son of Agi, the Hararite. And the Philistines were gathered together into a troop, and there was a piece of ground full of lentils. And the people fled from the Philistines, but he stood in the midst of the ground and defended it, and slew the Philistines. And the Lord wrought a great victory. And 30 chief went down and came to David in the harvest, time unto a cave of Adullam. And the troop of the Philistines pitched in the valley of Rephaim. And David was in an hold, and the garrison of the Philistines was then in Bethlehem. And David longed and said, "Oh, that one would give me a drink of the water that of the well of Bethlehem, which is by the gate." So this example is showing where David was down, and he was in a hold. He was in a fortress, and the garrison of the Philistines were in Bethlehem, and there was a whole army that was against them. And David was stuck in a cave. And David said, "Man, I wish I could have some of the water from Bethlehem. There's a fountain by the gate in Bethlehem, and the water is so good. I just wish I could have me a glass of that water, a cup of that water." Verse 16, "And the three mighty men break through the host of the Philistines and drew the water out of the well in Bethlehem, which is by the gate, and took it and brought it to David. Nevertheless, he would not drink thereof, but poured it out unto the Lord. And he said, 'Be it far from me, O Lord, that I should do this. Is not this the blood of the men that went in jeopardy of their lives?' Therefore, he would not drink it. These things did these three mighty men." So he said, "Man, I wish I could have some of the water from that well at Bethlehem." And these three dudes, they loved and followed David and obeyed him so much. They went out of the cave. They fought through the army that was there. Got to Bethlehem. Now, remember, there was a garrison in Bethlehem. So they had to fight Philistines in Bethlehem, got the water from the well, went back, had to fight back through the army that was blocking the cave, and then went back into the cave with David. And they gave him just for some water, for him to have some water. See, that's the kind of, now, that shows you how mighty these men were. That's what the scripture is talking about, how strong and how powerful they were. But that also shows the love and respect they had for their brother. It shows the kind of unity that they had. They were willing to put themselves at risk their lives. Why? For a cup of water. So that their brother could have a cup of water. Now, he wasn't dying of thirst. He was just like, "Man, I sure wish I could have had some of that water." He was just thinking about it. And yet, at the same time, David realized, "Man, these dudes risked their lives. My brothers risked their lives so that I could have this particular water that I asked for. If they're willing to do that, I can't drink this water." See, he honored them back. That's the type of honor and respect that they had for each other. So when we say, man, what kind of person do I need to be to please the Most High and to have a stronger relationship with the Most High? Well, this is the kind of relationship. The brother just wanted some water. They were willing to risk their lives. They were going to go to the wall for him. They went to the wall for him. They went all the way out so that he could have a certain particular cup of water. Now, that ain't about something. I don't know what is. Verse 18, Samuel, 2 Samuel 23 and 18. And Abishai, the brother of Joab, the son of Zeruiah, was chief among three. And he lifted up his spear against 300 and slew them and had the name among three. So he took his spear and slew 300 in one battle. Was he not most honorable of three? Therefore, he was their captain. Howbeit, he attained not unto the first three. So Abishai was of the second level, the second of three, of these three captains. And Benani, the son of Jehoiada, the son of a valiant man of Kabzeel, who had done many acts, he slew two lion-like men of Moab. He went down also and slew a lion in the midst of a pit in the time of snow. He slew an Egyptian, a goodly man, and the Egyptian had a spear in his hand, but he went down to him with a staff and plucked the spear out of the Egyptian's hand and slew him with his own spear. These things did Benaiah, the son of Jehoiada, and had the name among three mighty men. He was more honorable than the 30, but he attained not to the first three, and David set him over his guard. Asahel, the brother of Joab, was one of the 30. Elhanan, the son of Dodo of Bethlehem. Shema, the Herodite. Elikah, the Herodite. Helez, the Peltite. Ira, the son of Ikesh, the Tekonite, the Tekoite. Ebiezer, the Anathophite. Mibunai, the Hushathite. Zalman, the Ahohite. Maharai, the Nephothite. Heleb, the son of Bana, a Netophathite. Atai, the son of Rabbi, out of Gibeah, of the children of Benjamin. Benaiah, the Pirathonite. Hadiah, or Hadai, of the brooks of Gaash. Abia Albon, the Arbathite. Asmaveth, the Bahumite. Eliaba, the Shalbonite, of the sons of Jashan. Jonathan, Shema, the Haratite, Abiahim, Ahaim, the son of Sharar, the Hararite, Elphelet, the son of Ahasbai, the son of Makathite, the son of the Makathite, Eliam, the son of Ahithophel, the Gilonite, Hezrai, the Carmelite, Paarai, the Arbite, Igal, the son of Nathan, of Zobah, Bani, the Gadite, Zelek, the Ammonite, Naharai, the Beerothite, armor-bearer to Joab, son of Zeruiah, Ira, the Ithrite, Gareb, and Ithrite, Uriah, the Hittite, 37 in all. Now, I read all those names, and I know some of those words are hard to pronounce. And it was important because we all know the names of people like R. Kelly, P. Diddy. You know, we know the names of those who are about foolishness and negative. And people get caught up in all of that hype and all of that, the money and the hype and all of that. But you see where it took them. You see what kind of people they were really about. But we don't know these names, these men who put their lives on the line for their people, for their king, who many of whom they were obedient and loving and caring and sharing. And no, I'm not saying they were all without faults. because Joab was one of David's mighty men who did wrong. But it just shows you these are the kinds of names that we need to know. These are the names we need to know. Not, you know, what did so-and-so do with it? We know the Kardashians, and we know, oh, man, I don't care what Lisa Ray has to say. Are you kidding? But that's what the media and this society has taught us and shown us. And so we're all caught up in that rather than caught up in the names of the men who fought, the men and the women, who fought for us and stood for what was right and did things that were right and obeyed the Most High. Judith, we don't just need to know her name. What did she do? She dedicated her life to the Most High, and the Most High honored her. David dedicated his most, you know, Samuel. These are the names that we need to know and understand, and the feats that they did. See, P. Diddy was doing this and that. Now all of a sudden we find out, oh, well, he was having freak-offs. He, with all this negative, evil things that he was doing and leading other people into that foolishness and that filth and that corruption. We don't need to know that. We need to know, what did Judith do? We need to know, what did Samuel do? We need to know, what did David do? What did Abraham do? See, these are the things that we need to know, and that's what we need to think about and meditate on. That's what we need to spend our time figuring out. That's what we need to work on. It's always about letting go of our ego and our pride and our the negative that consumes us, because it's constantly around us. So we can get away from that and get back to the principles and understand the principles of what the Most High wanted us to do and how he wanted us to live. Because that's where we find life. That's where we find success. That's where we find, sometimes people talk about, all I want is peace of mind. And that's a common thing I've heard all my life. People talk about, I just want peace of mind. Well, the best way to get peace of mind, because the world is crazy, and what the world will teach you will lead you to craziness. It's madness. And you want peace of mind? Get into your relationship with the Most High. That's what we need to do. Now, we only have a few minutes left. So with that, I know we didn't finish that last chapter. Sometimes it goes like that. Sometimes it goes like that. We will certainly finish up the last chapter of 2 Samuel next, because we only have one chapter left. We'll definitely finish 2 Samuel next week, and we'll see whether we start Kings or whether the Most High is going to guide us into something else. Like I said, I'm working on something else, and I'm definitely going to put some good work into it this week, and we'll see how it develops and if it's ready to be brought forth or if we have to continue on, and then we'll get to where we get to. But may the Most High be with all of you. May you find comfort and peace in your relationship with the Most High. Work at it. Conquer that ego. Conquer that jealousy. Let go of all of those, the greed and the, all of that. Pray for one another. Repent for what you've done wrong. And may you all have a very good and positive week. And the Most High willing, we'll be together again next week. Y'all take care and shalom.